It is the breasts that, historically, have perhaps most encapsulated everything that a woman is expected to be, at least from the outside of the body. While they aren't necessary for sexual intercourse or conception, and indeed are classified by Western medicine as secondary sex characteristics, that has made them no less important as a marker of being a woman. But the ways in which the biological aspects of breasts and breastfeeding have been interpreted throughout history illustrate further that both sex, having breasts or not, and gender, what sort of breasts really count, are social constructs. Co-founder of the Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, William Blair Bell's 1916 definitions of femininity, asserted that the breasts form a secondary feminine characteristic, and in consequence should normally be well developed subsequent to puberty in every woman. To which we may be tempted to incredulously respond, every woman? And there's more. He continues, we may say, without fear of contradiction, that the woman who can and does suckle her children is strongly feminine, and that the future of the race is safe so far as she is concerned. No pressure there, then. Comments like these illustrate how it sometimes seems that we're being invited to see the breast more from the perspective of a baby, or of a man, than from that of a woman. In the late 1990s, when feminist author and historian Marilyn Yalom took her book A History of the Breast on tour, she noted not just that women feel like I've done something valuable for them, but also that men feel that women's power is somehow incarnated in the breast. They love and fear the breast. Part of the power of the breasts is simply their visibility. In contrast with the womb, ovaries, and vagina, breasts are parts of which not just the owner, but also casual observers are aware, even when the fashion of the day chooses to disguise their presence. Often, however, clothing draws even more attention to what's underneath, as in the various forms of female dress that accentuate the breasts, comparable to the early modern European codpiece highlighting the penis. Perhaps in part due to this visibility, breasts have featured throughout history, art, and culture in a prominent way. From discussions about their ideal size and shape to the different theories about their role in the body, both religion and science have told women what to do with their breasts. This is as true for Christian art, showing the Virgin Mary breastfeeding Jesus as a way of emphasizing his humanity. Her breasts are about him, not her. As for medical writers, encouraging women to feed their babies themselves, not just as a way of keeping children healthy, but also of preserving women's own health. There is, however, more to this than just visibility. It's about how the developing biology of the body meets, or doesn't meet, gender and sexual identity. In her 1999 book, A Dialogue on Love, Eve Kosofsky-Sedgwick, queer theorist and lesbian, described how her 1991 breast cancer diagnosis made her think, shit, now I guess I really must be a woman. For her, this disease was one which highlighted identity. Today, while many feel at home with their breasts, there are also many individuals who find their breasts very disturbing to their identity. Some use chest binders as an interim measure, and some trans men are delighted finally to have their breasts removed. Yet neither culture nor biology necessarily support any clear division on the grounds of sex or gender between people who have breasts and people who don't. Breasts, of course, don't feature in assigning sex at birth, and when women pass puberty, they may still have no obvious breasts, or may go on to lose one or both breasts from disease or an accident. The fact that men too have nipples can offer more evidence that the sexes are not so very different here. Despite this, across history, breasts have remained what the historian Kim Phillips has called legible flesh, understood as a way of reading identity, maturity, motherhood, and sexuality.